Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, June 24th, 2011. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the University of Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Are corn futures headed for a fall in July? Or will they be bailed out by the end of the month reports as the trade awaits word on acres and quarterly grain stocks? We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, our guest will be Steve Erdman of EFG in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today are Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Aaron Curtis of MITCO in Bloomington, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Corn futures saw whipsaw action this past week, pushed primarily by macro fundamentals. With end-of-the-month reports looming, will the macros continue to hold sway early next week? Mike Zuzulo.
Yeah, I think they probably will, Dave. We've had these past 2 weeks what would be called a Greek tragedy in the works, and I think that's where between the supply-demand numbers with the acreage and stocks report, they're probably going to take a back seat to the outside market fundamentals, and I think then we have to look forward to the issue of our debt ceiling having to be hammered out between July 1 and August 1. So the demand for risk, which has been being taken off the table these past 2 weeks, that demand for risk is still potentially going to be lowered even more if things don't go well in the outside markets, in my view.
A follow-up for you, Mike. Could this market become a 2008 fund-led meltdown where corn heads to the mid-550s or even lower as we get deeper into the summer?
I think the economics are much better in terms of economic recovery and how the banks are situated than we had in 2008. There's probably no Lehman Brothers or AIG out there on the horizon that could hurt us as bad as 2008 did, Dave. But I think the pattern of funds wanting to go ahead and push the markets lower and then the technicals, the longer-term technicals, if they would break, then I think you'd have to be open to that and be protected for that potential to happen between now and the August time period.
The Federal Reserve this past week acknowledged the U.S. economy is still lagging, but declined to announce additional quantitative easing. Is the Fed out of bullets, Kurt? And if so, what does that mean for the U.S. dollar in the third quarter?
Well, I think they're going to find some extra ammunition somewhere. Basically, you just can't let the things deteriorate to zero. You talk about countries failing. I haven't seen a country fail here. There's going to be last-minute help here. It's got a lot of cutting, a lot of economic work to do. It's not going to be pretty as we go down the road here, but that's going to be the concern as we move into August because you're going to have more funds to keep these treasury markets alive.
Have wheat futures found its bottom, Aaron? And to what degree do you think that wheat holds the key to corn futures?
Somewhat, I think. I think still pretty sensitive to the dollar compared to corn and beans, especially this week. We saw that, you know, Russia's kind of talking about getting back on the export market a little bigger than what we previously thought, especially considering their world wheat prices are priced very competitively and quite a bit cheaper than what we're seeing on the U.S. stand front. So I think the dollar is still very sensitive as an effect to wheat futures. And I think we'll dissect ourselves a little bit here from corn here moving forward as we move into the pollination period. for corn, and we'll see corn kind of stand on its own a little bit more.
Okay, let's preview the June 30th planted acres and grain stocks reports. We'll go around the room on each. What's your thinking first on acres planted and harvested? And we'll start with you, Aaron.
Well, I think we're still going to see a lot of questions as we move into the Thursday morning's report, whether or not the trade is going to actually believe what we see. We got to remember that those acres numbers are as of June 1st. So obviously, and if you watch the media very closely, you can see what Missouri River problems we've had moving forward, and also lower Mississippi issues we've had. Now more flooding concerns in North Dakota here late this week. So I don't know how closely we're going to believe the numbers, but I think we're still going to see USDA show something on the corn acres a little bit north of the 90 million acres at this point.
Mike?
I'm going to stick with the 89.7 on the corn, Dave, and I'm probably going to run that all the way into August, September, and I'm probably going to stay a little bit higher than USDA on beans at 77.2 until I send out a survey to the clients in July, August again, because there's just so much on the table still. I mean, on my way over here to Champaign, there were beans just starting to pop out of the ground, and, you know, guys are still talking about replanting some beans in certain areas or spotting in beans in certain areas. So I think it's way too early. I think Aaron's got a really good point. I get the sense from Chicago that the acreage number is going to be more important than the stocks. And from my own standpoint, I think the spreads will tell us a lot about what the trade feels in terms of demand sentiment. One of the bright spots to this past week as we closed out the week was that the corn and bean spreads really came around nicely. They were severely oversold. We had some demand come in. The basis is picking up. So hopefully the report will add to the more positive spread mindset, because that's been one of the two big things that's hit us bad, as along with those outside markets, has been bean cancellations and the weaker spreads.
Kurt?
Well, I feel planted corn acres is going to be 1.5 million, maybe up to towards 2 million less than the March intentions report. Beans, boy, that's a tough one. Anywhere from unchanged to 500,000 acres less. But where they're going to come in and make the adjustments is going to be on harvested acres. That's their only way to really fine-tune it as we move down the road in here, and that's going to be spread out between probably clear out October time they get a handle on where we're at on that.
And now the grain stocks report, Mike.
Well, as I said, I get the sense that the trade is going to look more at the acreage numbers. I don't have much deviation from what the USDA has been carrying, because they've been trying to keep up with the feed and residual number. There's always that chance for a surprise. I think there, again, I'm going to let the market tell me what to do in terms of how they feel after the report. And if the spreads start to firm, and this is where it goes back to, are we in a 1996-type market environment? Well, in 1996, when the wheat corn spread went discount, the July Dease corn went crazy between now and the early part of July. I think it went to $1.88, if I remember right, Dave. This is the time window to have that happen. Does the report next week indicate it's time to do that again? I think that's what I'm going to be watching for.
Kurt?
Well, we're going to be at pipeline supplies on corn. It's tight. It's going to stay tight. There's going to be, you know, spot indications where, you know, you're going to have a real hot basis to move that last little chunk. But we'll see what numbers they come up with, but mathematical, where as tight as it could be. Bean movement slowed down quite a bit. I wouldn't be surprised to see beans come in probably a little higher than what the trade's looking for.
Aaron?
Well, Dave, I think I agree with Mike. I got to let the spreads kind of determine. Obviously, 2 weeks ago, it was hard-pressed to get anybody to convince me that the July SEP was going to move into even money, and we saw that here this week. We did see the thing narrow back out here a little bit late this week. But obviously, the elevator side of the business that we work with, obviously very interested in what that July SEP does. So not expecting a whole lot of change from what the U.S. or from what the average guess is as far as what grain stocks is going to be. So kind of waiting to see, like Mike said, what those spreads are going to do. It's going to be an interesting late week, that's for sure.
July wheat had a high on the week of 681 and a quarter, a low of 606. July wheat finishing the week at 635 and three quarters, down 36 and a half from last week. July of 2012 week ending at 754 and a quarter, down 47 from a week ago. July corn, the high there, 719 and a quarter, the low 639. July settled at 670, down 30 and a quarter from a week ago. December corn had a settlement of 632, down 28 from last week. July soybeans, the high 1354 and three quarters, the low 1292 and three quarters. The settlement for July at 1320 and a quarter, down 12 and three quarters from last week. November soybeans finishing the week at 1309 and a quarter, down 24 from a week ago. July oats finishing out the week at 335 and a half, down 16 from last week. After next Thursday, especially if the quarterly grain stocks report shows declining inventories, I suppose it will be weather that is the leading factor for futures direction. And there certainly does not appear to be anything threatening in line for the next 10 days or so, Kurt. As you look at the weather pattern as we head out to the July 4th weekend, is there anything there that concerns you?
Well, it's a good weather question for a good weather man. The ridge tries to intensify, then it weakens, so it's up and down. We'll see what next week brings as we start to look into July. Probably more later July, as late as the corn crop is, and you start getting the pollination. That's going to be the key. But we've got two different weather scenarios. We've got a wet north and a dry south. So even though that ridge amplifies and up and down, it's going to be critical to keep it confined to the south.
A follow-up for you on weather, Kurt. Might it be that a cool summer with late planted corn actually costs us growing degree days that could hurt yield in the end?
Well, it's a long growing season. Right now the concern is the cool spring here, ear size and girth. We'll see if that develops. But as we move into August, we'll see how this crop finishes off, because it can be affected clear into harvest.
Interestingly, basis did not widen this past week with the big drop on the board. Are commercials, Aaron, trying to tell us that there may be enough corn and as a substitute wheat to get us to harvest?
Yeah, a lot of conversation, obviously, about the wheat feeding here this past week. And, you know, our contacts tell us there's not as much wheat being fed as maybe the media would like to convince us it's happening. Obviously, Tyson, Pilgrim's Pride have kind of told us they're feeding a little more wheat than normal. But, you know, if you go out to the eastern states, North Carolina, those areas, they're not seeing as much that much wheat feeding. You got $1.20 carry from July to March. So if you have good quality wheat, you're not going to be feeding that stuff going forward. So that's obviously something interesting to watch. But I think the wheat feeding story is probably going to be more focused on China, world situation. I think we're going to see some increase in wheat feeding demand on a worldwide scale, not so much domestically at this point.
Looking at the corn technicals, it does not appear to me that the bulls are completely out of the woods yet after the big drop this week. Yes, harvest corn did stay above its long trend uptrend line through the November 10 and March 11 lows, but 655 is setting up as new overhead resistance. Mike, what will it take technically for the bulls to breathe a sigh of relief, either on the corn or other leading indicator charts?
Well, I think several. I think the Goldman Sachs Agricultural Index is something I followed ever since 2008, along with the Chinese Stock Market Index, because those two help promote the idea that the crude oil, the corn, many of the commodities like copper and grains trade together when we get into these types of outside market-led reductions for the demand for risk, and or deleveraging, as some would call it, Dave. I think Aaron had a huge point about the wheat. The domestic situation on feed wheat probably isn't as big as the media is trying to promote, but I talked to a good contact in South Africa who buys a lot of wheat into Europe, and the Black Sea wheat is being talked about a lot by him and his comrades over there, because it's at $258 a ton, and that's about $80 to $90 a ton less than September FOB here in at the Gulf for Chicago wheat. They see that, or excuse me, for hard red wheat, that's a really good discount, and they are seeing a pickup in feed wheat. And I think that explains pretty well why the European wheat markets led us by the nose here these last 2 weeks. So that's a key indicator, too, is the European markets and that Paris market especially.
Kurt, why did the International Energy Agency announce they were going to release 60 million barrels of oil from strategic government stockpiles when oil prices to that point actually was down $9 since June 9th?
Well, a big international event like that takes time. You got to have communications, and you got to be all on the same page. But every news media is pretty well promoted. They're worried about the U.S. economy and world economy trying to come in and help get the recession back recovery going here. But basically, they're saying, you know, we're replacing Libya's production. Shortfall there on the world market, but it's a dynamic event. This is the third time in the U.S. that's happened here over the last 10 years.
In 2 minutes, we'll hear from Steve Erdman, president of EFG in Chicago, Illinois.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Warm, humid weather was back again the first part of this week, along with plenty of rain, but we finished the week with much cooler weather across the state. Temperatures averaged 2 to 3 degrees above normal through this past Tuesday, but that was more than offset by the cooler and less humid weather that spread south through Illinois on Tuesday. When all was said and done, temperatures averaged a couple of degrees below normal as highs dropped to the low and mid-70s. The warm, humid air early this week, along with a strong upper-level low-pressure system, resulted in widespread showers and thunderstorms Monday and Tuesday. June rainfall to date is more than 200% of normal in western Illinois and normal to well above normal across the rest of the state. The cold, unstable air aloft associated with the upper-low circulation this week produced scattered showers the last half of the week. The front that ushered in the cooler weather this week will begin to return northward over the weekend. That will increase the chances for thunderstorms across Illinois on Sunday. Thunderstorm chances will persist through the early part of next week as the front continues to lift northward, with the best chances in northern Illinois by Tuesday. It appears warmer and drier weather will be in place across Illinois the last half of the week and next weekend. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Our panelists today are Kurt Kimmel, Aaron Curtis, and Mike Zuzolo. Joining us today by phone is Steve Erdman of EFG in Chicago. EFG was established in 1992, and it has vast experience in both cash trade and futures, providing commodity information to retail, discount, and commercial customers. Thanks for being with us today, Steve.
Thanks for having me, David.
We have two big reports out next Thursday. If there are surprises, what is most likely?
Oh, I think from my vantage point, I think the surprise could be more corn acres than what people are looking for. I don't understand how the trade has really thought that the stocks have been as tight as everybody's wanted them to be for the last 6 months. I think the trade has been trying to treat this market like our 1996 market, and the spreads have never acted the way they should, Dave. And I think it's primarily because of the DDG flow that's displacing corn usage for feed here domestically.
Questions for Steve, Aaron.
So going back to the acres report, Steve, as far as you said, a little more corn acres than what you think. You think planted acres are still going to be on the plus side of 90 million acres, or what's your guess there? What do you think for Thursday's report?
It is a guess. That's the important thing, Aaron. But I do think from the guys that we talked to out west, I think when they were planting corn in northwestern Iowa and north central Iowa, the conditions were just ideal. And from everybody that I've talked to in that Crescent area, starting from southwestern Iowa up into Minnesota, there's just a heck of a lot of corn planted. And I think, you know, $6.50 prices or $6 prices is stimulating a lot of corn going into the ground.
Steve, try and, if you can, tie together the extremes of this week. China saying there's new record pork prices that have gone over their 2008 high or peak. And then what's going on in the break in the markets and this deleveraging in funds? Is this going to, are these two things going to come together, or how do you feel about those two extremes?
Well, I think everybody's fearful of China, and they have been for the last, you know, 12 months in terms of their economic slowdown. They keep raising the reserve banking requirements, and everyone knows that China is the big elephant in the room. They're our main demand source. Every time there's a corn rumor, this week I think we had two different days, they were rumored to be buying 1.5 to 2 million tons of corn. They came in and bought beans. There's a bean announcement today. Everybody knows that the hog herd in China is 500 million hogs. I think it ties together in the fear that they're trying to control their inflation, but they still need to feed their people, and I think it's a real issue for them in terms of being able to continue to put meat in front of their people. And I think they're going to be forced to, you know, if they can't react to producing a greater supply of pork for their population, they're going to be probably looking at importing pork to satisfy the consumer and to try to, you know, knock prices down a little bit, Mike.
Are the highs in the grain market, Steve?
Kurt, I'm afraid they might be, and we've got a proprietary weekly trend following system that turned down today with today's closes in both July and D's corn, and I just think everybody has been extremely bullish, primarily for the as tight as things have been perceived to be. My big fear is that we could knock corn down another buck and a half from where we closed today. You know, I think if you look at a chart, if we close under this 759 area, which we did not do today, but if we get any kind of price action below 759, I mean, the market, the charts can get pretty scary looking real quick. And if we take out 620 in Dease corn, you know, I could conceivably see a break back to 5 to 520 in nearby corn, and I could see Dease corn taking a reasonable tumble also. But you guys said it in the conversation. I think Aaron brought it up. We've got a long ways to go. It's we've killed the crop once. It went in the ground 2 or 3 weeks ago. Everybody's focus immediately went from supply to demand and the demand destruction that we were going through. I think, you know, we will go back at some point in the third week of July probably and get paranoid about the pollination and the heat that we might be experiencing at that time. And if that doesn't do it, then, you know, as late as things went in this year, you're going to be looking at frost scares and the kind of situation we had a couple of years ago when the harvest was so late.
So, Steve, do you still think carryouts for this marketing year are still going to trend higher?
I do, Aaron. I think, again, not to beat a dead horse, but I really think the USDA has not accounted for the amount of DDGs in the feed pipeline in the United States. And I think it could, you know, what the last report we had for corn was, what, 695 million? I don't know how much they can lower feed usage and because of DDG displacement, but I think it's a real factor, and I think that is the main problem that the market's had. That's why we haven't acted like the 1996 market. That's why the spreads haven't, to any great degree, March, May, or March, July, and May, July, and now July, Dece, why they've tumbled so badly is because the perception is that there's no corn out there, but the reality is that I think it's just a logistical issue to be dealt with. We're pulling corn from the Western Belt over into Indiana and over into Ohio and up into Canada. They're pulling trains out of southern Wisconsin and northwestern Iowa to satisfy the ethanol crushers in Pennsylvania and up into Canada, and I think that's going to continue.
Steve, when you look at the outside markets, you've talked a lot about supply and demand, and you've kind of associated that with this past couple weeks' breaks. As far as the fund selling that's happened, would you say that this sharp, violent move down has been hedge fund, commodity funds, or do you have any insight there?
I think from our context, Mike, it's index fund liquidation, and I think it's trading fund liquidation. Everybody, I don't care how many years experience they've had in the grain business or in the trading business, has been bullish the spot corn. And you know what, guys, going into first notice day next week with the quarterly stocks report, we may see a squeeze play in July corn. I don't see it. I keep hearing guys that have coverage out into mid-September, you know, and I hear, in the same breath, I've got to acknowledge that there's other ethanol crushers that are running on 5 to 10 days of corn inventory. So I think it's a real mixed bag out there, and it's going to get violent, I'm afraid, in terms of price action and volatility that we're going to experience in the next several weeks.
Well, Steve, what's your best advice for a producer here that maybe is not taking advantage of these higher prices?
Well, Curtis, I wouldn't be sitting on old crop corn any longer. It's too scary a game for me. I do my best to go out and get whoever the buyers are in their local markets to push for grain, because I think there is push. I think Toledo, for example, in the last 2 weeks has advertised 35 over, 45 over, and I know that 80 over traded in Toledo. So you do have some isolated areas that will push for grain. If I had old crop corn, I'd be taking advantage of that. I think at the very least, I wouldn't. It depends on each producer's outlook and how bullish they want to be. I think when you're looking at a $6 plus approximation for your corn, you got to be pretty bullish to just be outright buying puts, you know, because you're looking for another leg up in corn prices. And I guess at this point in time, I'd advise at least bear put spreads. I don't know that I'd short calls, because if we did have any kind of adverse conditions, either with pollination or with the frost potential this fall, I mean, we're still tight enough that it's going to have a dramatic impact. And world stocks are tight enough in corn, I think, that we've got to be, you know, mindful that any big violent break that I'm fearful of is going to be well supported at a price. So I think in general terms, the producer's got a parachute underneath him. But I just don't want to see him watch corn, Dease corn, for example, go from 630 down to 525 and freak out and sell into that kind of break. Because, again, I think there's natural support under the market because world corn stocks are so tight.
Steve, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, David. It's always a pleasure.
That's Steve Erdman, president of EFG in Chicago, Illinois. And now a chance for a quick final word from our panelists. Aaron.
Two reports on Thursday, first notice day, a new month on Friday, and, of course, all ahead of a three-day weekend. So you may get your fireworks just a little early this year.
Mike?
Fundamental demand, I think, came back to the markets these past 2 weeks. Dave, let's see if the funds can come back as well.
Kurt?
Yeah, I think Steve pretty well summed up. There's some downside price risk here, and that's why we're in the business to manage risk.
That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Remember, you can sign up for our free weekly Ag e-newsletter. Go to willag.org and use the link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.